All right, here we go.
What is about? There's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
All right, welcome to a brand new week. It is Nicole Sandler here at RadioOrNot.com, and we have a new element to the show today. So hopefully I am welcoming some new listeners as well at TalkRadio1.com. Yes, you know, since the untimely death of Air America just over a week ago, I scrambled to get a way to do a show live on the internet. And I've been using Ustream, and it's been a great service. But as many of you know who just like to listen and don't necessarily want to watch me talk into a microphone, it wasn't quite as easy to just listen on Ustream. And I knew I needed to get my, an audio stream a dedicated audio stream going as well. And thanks to an old friend of mine, Mark Germain, who runs an internet radio station called TalkRadio1.com, we've got that going now. So there are now two, count them, two ways to listen to the Nicole Sandler Show, through the Ustream video or via TalkRadio1.com. Now, we're trying to make it as easy as possible for you. So we do have a player embedded in RadioOrNot.com, which maybe you're listening from. You can also go to TalkRadio1.com, where they have a number of other shows. So in just a few minutes, we'll check in with Mark Germain. Now, listeners in the Los Angeles area, and I know I've got a few of you, might remember Mark Germain, because he is a talk radio guy from way back. I mean, I left L.A., just almost 10 years ago. I left L.A. at the end of 2001, yeah, right after 9/11, really. And, while I was there, yes, I did a lot of music radio, but I was a talk radio listener. And I used to listen to a guy named Mr. KFI. Now, KFI is the big powerhouse talk station in Los Angeles. And this guy used to come on, only known as Mr. KFI, and he would answer questions and just do open phones, and he was quick and smart and funny, and I was a big fan. And as happens in radio, he was at one point, I guess, let go, and not too long after, surfaced across the street, as they say, at KABC. And was called Mr. KABC. So you get the idea. When that ended, he went to KTLK and became the just Mr. K, and then finally started using his real name, Mark Germain. Well, again, stuff happens in this business. It is a crazy, crazy business that I got into many years ago. Now Mark Germain launched, probably about a year and a half, we'll find out from him when we talk to him, launched this internet station called TalkRadio1.com. And he and I have been talking for, since I lost my job here in Miami, which is now going on about a year and a half, about doing this. And, sometimes you need the circumstances to work out just the right way. And in this case, I think they did. And hopefully this is the start of a wonderful working relationship. And we've got a lot of stuff coming, in the near future. So next step gone. We got the audio stream, the video stream. We have a new phone number, too, really. So if you want to call into the show, here's the way to do it. All right. It is 213-291-9410. 213-291-9410. And I'll do my best to get to your calls as quickly as they come in. But you know, if you do call in and I'm in the middle of something, I will pick up, put you on hold, and then I'll get to you shortly. But apparently with this system, we can take calls. When I have a guest on, we can take calls. And we've got a good show for you tonight. Now, I have been looking forward to this one for a long time. John Perkins. Now, you know John Perkins, right? John Perkins wrote the book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman. And I never got to interview him when that book came out. But I was a big fan of his work. I wasn't crazy about some of the things that he did, before he saw the light, so to speak. But I think he's sort of redeemed himself. Yes, and now he's got a new book out called Hoodwinked. An Economic Hitman Reveals Why the World Financial Markets Imploded and What We Need to Do to Remake Them. Now, the sad thing is, well, it's not sad, but, you know, I just went into a whole diatribe on how you can now call in and talk to guests. I taped this a couple hours ago because he had, he's been out of the country. He had plans to go out with his wife tonight. So, we taped this about 3 o'clock this afternoon, Eastern. So it was just a few hours ago. And, I think you will enjoy the interview. I hope you do half as much as I did, because he is fascinating. And, hopefully I'll have him back on the show, at least semi-regularly. Okay. Now there's another story that I have not really been dealing with, just because there's been so much else going on, but it is the story of, Watergate Jr., this wannabe pimp, right? James O'Keefe, the guy who shot those phony videos, you know, trying to frame Acorn, for which Acorn was totally cleared, you know, right? You do know that. Yes. Totally cleared of any wrongdoing. And in fact, so much more dirt has come out. So much dirt has come out about that video. Remember, he supposedly dressed up as a pimp with the fur and the big hat with his sleazy hooker girlfriend and went into the Acorn offices? Well, check this out. When they shot him in the pimp outfit, that was before they went in the offices. Now, you notice they never showed him inside the pimp office, inside the Acorn office. He had totally changed his outfit, and he was dressed like a respectable college student, posing as the boyfriend of this hooker trying to get her help. So if you're wondering why these people even spoke to them, because they weren't dressed the way you saw them in the video. And then a lot of the voices, the questions that you heard, were dubbed in after the fact. So this thing was just a scam on Acorn from start to finish. All right. And then, of course, there was the break-in at Senator Mary Landrieu's office in New Orleans. So Brad Friedman of the Brad blog will be joining us shortly as well to talk about what is going on. Because, you know, on one hand, we hear that it's, you know, it was just like a childish prank and they weren't really trying to tap the phones. And on the other hand, we're hearing that, that some FBI or CIA people, there's some kind of CIA connection there. So there's stuff going on there. And Brad Friedman knows so much about what's going on. And there's another weird connection with this story that I didn't even think about until after I got I hooked up with Mark Germain and Talk Radio One for the audio streaming of this show and booked Brad Friedman on, who has written extensively about this creep, Andrew Breitbart. Well, again, Mark Germain has been doing this Talk Radio One show for at least a year and a half, since before I started, long before I started Nights on Air America Radio. And I've been a guest on Mark Germain's show a few times. And the last time I was on his show, I forget what we were talking about. It was during the campaign even. So it was, I believe, before the election. And Mark Germain had me on with Andrew Breitbart. And can I tell you how ugly it got? This guy is a nasty, miserable, just a piece of work. I mean, I'm trying to use air-friendly language because I did get an email from somebody who told me that he rebroadcasts my show on a low-powered signal somewhere. I think somewhere like in Maine. So I don't want to get him in trouble. So I will try to watch the expletives, all right, even though I know we're doing the online thing. Anyway, so that's the scoop. That's what we've got tonight. We do have Brad Friedman coming up. We have John Perkins coming up. And we have Mark Germain from Talk Radio 1. Sorry, talkradio1.com. So I'll tell you what, let's do this. Before I get him on the line, I have a computer issue here right now. So you know what, let's see if I can bring Mark Germain up right now. This will be fun because I'm just calling him live via this program I have here. And let's see if it'll work. And see if Mark Germain, I think he's listening to make sure the stream is working correctly. But we'll try to get Mark Germain on the phone.
Hey there. I'm here.
You're there. Mark Germain. Welcome to Radio or Not and the Nicole Sandler Show on Talk Radio 1.
Yeah, well, welcome to Talk Radio 1.
Well, thank you so much. So you heard my little lead up about my run-in with Andrew Breitbart on your show.
Your famous dust-up with Andrew Breitbart. This happened, you're right, it was before the election.
Uh-huh.
And it was some pretty good radio. In fact, that's in the archive. So if people want to go search it, just go to the on-demand page on Talk Radio 1 and search Nicole Sandler, and you'll see the dust-up with Andrew Breitbart. You didn't really know who he was when you came on, and you see now that he's the darling of the right wing.
He's
really been embraced, and now he's all over MSNBC. He comes on to debate and challenge, and he's got a very odd temperament. There's a great story, in fact, just today on the Daily Beast.
Uh-huh.
Lloyd Grove does an interview with him, and he says just bizarre things, like out of nowhere he'll say, "Oh, I murdered a kid today."
Andrew Breitbart?
Yeah, but he says it to be, he thinks it's funny.
Oh, yeah.
And if you read the context, it comes off really awkward and stilted. And it's all about his connection with the this guy that broke into Mary.
James O'Keefe.
Yeah, James O'Keefe.
Right.
He's payroll. Yeah.
What's really scary is, I mean, that night when we did the show, I was expecting a nice, respectful give and take, but it deteriorated so quickly into someone who was just so nasty that I didn't know where to go with it. I mean, I knew he had this website that was sort of a drudge wannabe. In fact, it's even his name, Breitbart.com or whatever it was.
Right.
And then you informed me that he was sort of a drudge wannabe, a drudge protege.
Well, he actually worked with Drudge. He was, the Drudge Report is 24 hours, and
right.
12 hours of the day, Matt does it from the East Coast, and 12 hours a day, Andrew was doing it from the West Coast. So he was the Drudge Report for half the day, and then he and Matt had a falling out, and then
surprised.
And then they made up. Andrew's an interesting guy. But first of all, the guy he is when he's really belligerent, like he was with you, and when he was David Schuster had a dust up with him last week on MSNBC. It's on YouTube. That guy is not the guy who I've had dinner with. The guy I had dinner with is not that belligerent and not that much of a Kool-Aid drinker. But the guy who's appearing on media shows, for whatever reason, he thinks this is good television, good media. And he loves to dust it up, and that's fine. I'm all for drama, and I'm all for, a fist fight in media. What I don't understand is this. It's so unhinged to me. It's so far to the right that someone like that I wouldn't really want to have dinner with.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would just find what they have to say so objectionable, and I didn't find him to be that way when he's not that guy. And he sort of talks about this in this Lloyd Grove interview on the Daily Beast today. It's worth checking out. I almost wish you had seen it before we ended up talking. I had no idea we were going to talk about him today, but anyway, I think he's he went to law school.
Yeah.
Has a law degree.
Okay. Well, that doesn't help the cause of lawyers anywhere.
Well, the point is he's not stupid.
Right.
Matt Drudge, on the other hand, has no education. Matt Drudge was folding T-shirts at the CBS. They have a little gift
the swag
shop
store.
CBS.
Yeah.
And so that's his background.
Wow.
And I don't know that makes him any more or less interesting as an internet news figure. I just think it sort of puts things, I think, a little bit into perspective. Breitbart,
he's trying to become a Glenn Beck. I think he's trying to be as outrageous as he can and get his name out there. And I guess it works. I mean, we're talking about him, right?
Right. And he is, and there is something entertaining about it. And that's the problem, is that too much of politics has become entertainment based and not fact based and not issues based.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. I try to do an entertaining show as well, but that doesn't mean that I'm going to amp up my beliefs in order to make it more dramatic. And I think that's too often what we're seeing. That is exactly what Glenn Beck does.
Yeah.
I think at his core, he has some of those beliefs, but I also think that he's got an hour to fill every day, 5 days a week. And on television, that's a lot of time for one person.
Yeah, I can't do it. I mean, I get frustrated. As you could tell with the time I was on with Breitbart, stupidity just, a good, well-reasoned, well-thought-out argument, I can deal with.
Right.
But stupidity, there's no argument. You can't argue. You know, it's like, as Barney Frank said, arguing with a dining room table. I'm not going to do it.
Right. Well, I think that's what I'm trying to say, is that I don't think he is a stupid guy.
Mm-hmm.
I agree that debate devolved into stupidity, the dust up that you had with him. But I don't think he's a stupid guy. I think he's actually a bright guy. And
not so bright, Bart.
And I think he's doing something interesting. I mean, he was, and it says this in the article in the Daily Beast today, that he was one of the founders of the Huffington Post and Ariana Online. So
really,
yeah, and that's why he left Ariana, because they had, I think, a dispute over
ideology.
Arrangements.
Oh, financial. So he didn't even care about the politics of it. He's probably one of those people who just decided, well, there's more money to be made on the conservative right wing nut side, so I'll go there.
Well, I'd like to agree with you on that. I think he is genuine in his beliefs. I just think that he can be more entertaining if he amps up his beliefs in the way that he did with you and the way he did with David Schuster, and by hiring, videographers to go into break into Mary Landrieu's office, allegedly.
Yes. Well, we'll find out. I mean, Brad, do you know Brad Friedman from Bradblog?
I know of him.
Yeah.
I don't know him. Never met him, no.
He'll be joining us at the bottom of the hour, because he's all over this story. So we'll get the scoop from him.
Well, you know what? It's very interesting. I didn't realize something that you had mentioned in this lead up to the interview, which is that the video that the suit that he's wearing, the pimp outfit, he's not wearing when he's talking to the Acorn.
Do you believe that? Yeah.
And a lot
of the audio was dubbed in afterwards.
Right.
So they're answering questions that are not the questions you hear on the tape. And they have yet to release the original unedited audio videotapes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not surprised those are the tactics that were being used. It just didn't occur to me when I watched that video that had been done, but it is shot from his perspective. It's like a hidden camera
in his cap
or his glasses or something. And so you don't know what he's wearing, and that's a very interesting perspective that you don't get from the video.
You're right. Yep. There's a lot we don't know about this, so it'll be an interesting segment. Mark Germain is with me. He is the guy behind TalkRadio1.com, and if you're just listening to the audio stream at RadioOrNot.com, that's how you're getting it, through Talk Radio 1. And I don't know, we had a caller. Let's see if the caller is still here. Hi, who's there?
Hey, Nicole, this is David.
Hi, David, you're on.
Beautiful. Go ahead. What a beautiful voice you have. Oh, my gosh.
Well, thank you.
Wow. You know what? Just a quick note. It's just technical. Mark is about half the volume that you are.
Ah, and I just boosted him a little bit. So, Mark, talk a little bit. Tell us if that's any better.
Well, I also have a beautiful voice, David. Yes. And I was a little resentful that you didn't mention that.
You're right. I didn't mention that. You're exactly right. You know what? You guys sound good now. You sound almost even.
Oh, cool. Okay. Yeah.
Let Mark talk to you in just a second.
Okay. As we get the bugs worked out.
And then get back to us how we're sounding. Okay,
yeah,
fair enough.
You got it. You guys are perfectly even now.
Awesome. Well, thank you, David. All right. You're calling from L.A. I see from your the phone number.
I am indeed from the South Bay. Long, long, long time fan of Mark, and it looks like you may be added to the list as well.
So. Well, I hope so. And actually, David, I'm not new to L.A. I spent a lot of years in Los Angeles radio before heading out. I'm in Florida now. But back in their heyday, maybe I shouldn't admit this, I worked with Mark and Brian. Did you ever listen to them back when they
You're
ruled?
You're kidding. Wow. Did you really?
Do you remember? 90 to 94, wow. I was that
no
Nicole.
Kidding.
Yeah. And then,
yeah.
And then do you remember KSCA, FM 101.9 or Channel 1031?
Don't. No. The 1031 sounds Vegas, but the other does not ring a bell.
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah. So from the Mark and Brian days, but I've grown up since then.
Yeah, very good. Haven't we all?
Yeah.
Okay, I just want to let you know, you guys sound terrific.
All
now.
Right.
Thanks so much.
Well, thanks for calling. All right. See, it's that easy. The phone number is 213-291-9410. Now, Mark, I've got a chat room open here, and Solo Pocono is asking if they can get Talk Radio 1 on iTunes, VLC, Windows Media, or any of those ways.
No, it is not available on iTunes because we want people to come to. It's very interesting because this is all a learning process because we're all broadcast pioneers,
mm-hmm.
And. Most people listen via podcast. They don't listen via streaming. It's something like 80 or 90% listen to podcasts.
Right.
Just because it's convenient and everyone's got an iPod or an MP3 player or their cell phone that plays MP3s. And so that's just how people are using internet radio. At least that's how they're using it today. 6 months from now, a year from now, it may be completely different. So, there are podcasts available after the live shows on Talk Radio 1. All the shows are available. Nicole's show will be available. You'll just click on the link and you'll be able to download it or listen to the stream. You'll be able to listen to the stream but not the live stream as it's playing. You can listen on an iPhone. There's an app that you can get for $5, and there's a link to that on the talkradio1.com page, a link to the iTunes store and this $5 app that you can download, put on your iPhone or iPod Touch, and you can listen to the live stream. Like right now, someone in their car in the Midwest could have their iPhone up and running and be listening to us live as we're streaming. So to me, this was the thing we've been waiting for, is the ability to broadcast mobily, because that's where AM and FM radio traditionally are listened,
mm-hmm.
is mobile. And now that you have that on your cell phone, and you know, most people have a cassette adapter or some way to, through a Bluetooth connection to their car stereo, can now listen, and it's awesome. It sounds as good as it sounds on your computer, which to me is better than FM quality. You'll be able to listen in your car driving anywhere, and you don't get that fade in and fade out that you get with traditional broadcast rate. As long as you have a connection to your data plan on your cell phone, I've driven from L.A. to Las Vegas and listened to Pandora, for example,
mm-hmm.
The whole way and not had a dropout. It's really pretty amazing.
You know, I don't have an iPhone. I have an Android phone.
That's
I've got
I have too.
The G1. Oh, so you'll have to tell me what app to use because I can't figure it out yet.
Unfortunately, there's no one doing someone. That yet for the Droid. I have the Verizon Droid as well. The Motorola Droid.
Yeah, mine is the G1, the first Google phone they made for the T-Mobile. And I love the phone, and it does have some streaming applications, but I can't get it. Now, for Christmas, I bought my boyfriend an internet Wi-Fi internet radio for his house, and he used to be able to listen to my Air America show on that. And we got to figure out how to get Talk Radio 1 on there, too.
We got to figure it out, yeah, because each of those have their own database.
That's right.
Each of those, you know, streaming media applications or hardware have their own database, and we just need to get them to know that we're here, and they can add us to the list. But, yep, that's all. I mean, it's all coming.
Yep, that's it. And it's a one-day-at-a-time thing. And, you know, look, I'm a week into the show, and thanks to Mark Germain and TalkRadio1.com, now we are streaming. So we've got the audio stream and the video stream and the podcasting going, and we can take calls, too. So it's all coming together. So, Mark, you're on live weeknights. What time are you on?
8 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern. And then, like I said, by podcast anytime.
Right. And, you know, that's my old time slot. That's why when I started doing the Late Night Air America show, I was on 11 p.m. Eastern, so we didn't get to do each other's show anymore. There was a little hole from some of my listeners who liked the 11 p.m. Eastern time slot, so maybe they'll come over and check your show tonight. What do you have going on tonight?
Well, on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, Sharon the Gossip Mom joins us with the latest dish from Hollywood, and then Dan Avey, the award-winning Dan Avey. Do you know him? He's been a longtime L.A. Radio fixture.
I know his name, but I don't think I've ever met him.
Dan does news for us, and I have a woman named Dina Lacito in New York City who counterpunches, for lack of a better term, and she's a very entertaining, very smart woman who is a – we found her – she's a friend of a friend, and she's a Michael Jackson fanatic. And so when Michael Jackson died,
oh, no.
I had her kind of as our special Michael Jackson correspondent. And she was so good and so entertaining that she's become a daily fixture on the show. So she's on with me every night. And then other things kind of come and go. We do interviews sometimes, and we get into basically the news of the day. That's mostly what we talk about. And it's kind of a nice wrap-up for the evening. And we take phone calls and, yeah, like that.
Very cool. So, and by the way, if you are just on my site, you can, if you click on the player at 11 p.m. Eastern tonight, you will get Mark Germain's show. And you've got some other shows. A guy that I also used to work with at KLOS when I worked with Mark and Brian, Frank Sontag, does a show for you too, right?
He does Tuesdays and Thursdays at 7 p.m., Frank Sontag. And then Monday nights, Dr. Annie Thiel is on. She's a kind of prominent psychotherapist here in Los Angeles. Her husband founded Doctors Without Borders.
Wow.
So she's been talking. He's since passed away and she's remarried, but she's still very involved with Doctors Without Borders. So she's been talking a lot about what's going on in Haiti
and has a lot of
connections. In fact, she's got I guess whoever is running Doctors Without Borders in Haiti has been on her show the last couple of weeks. That's on Monday nights. And then Mike Mendoza is live from the UK. He used to do a show called on a network in the UK called TalkSport. Steven Spear does a show for us. He's a real estate attorney on Saturday mornings, kind of gives personal and financial advice. And then a guy named Steve Parker, the car nut.
Sure. I know who he is.
You know, Steve on Saturdays and Sundays does a show for us. And I feel like I'm leaving someone out, but I think I got everybody in.
Okay. And people can go to talkradio1.com and see the whole schedule and listen to some old shows and even find my shouting match with Andrew Breitbart. Maybe I'll go in and find it and put a link up on my page to it.
Okay.
Since,
all right.
It is a piece of internet radio classic stuff because, again, on your show, you go no holds barred with language because it's internet. But I did get a really nice email from somebody the other day telling me that he's rebroadcasting my show in a small, like a community signal. And so he asked me to hold it back. And I will, because I'm working on some other things, maybe, you know, supplying some weekend programmings to some of the stations that used to carry my show. So better to not have to go through and bleep out words.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Well, then I guess that's it. Mark Germain on tonight, 11 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Pacific at Talk Radio 1 and talkradio1.com.
Nicole, love having you on. Thank you.
Love being here. Thank you. All right. We'll talk again soon. That is bye. Mark Germain. Wow. And he's one of the good ones. You will enjoy his show. Yes. Talkradio1.com. Yeah. Mark, and for the people in the chat room who are just joining, we never worked together, but I was a listener. I was a fan of his when I lived in Los Angeles. I did music radio, but I always listened to talk radio. I've always been a talk radio junkie. Even when I played, it's Talk Radio 1, spelled out O-N-E. And there's a link to it from my page at radioornot.com. You can get to Talk Radio 1 from there. So anyway, you're looking through OOTunes, and it's not listed as Talk Radio 1. I don't know. Look up Mark Germain. Maybe you can find it that way. All right, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to play a very quick tune, and we'll get our next guest on the phone. What should I play for you? I know, you know what? I've been playing a lot of Randy Newman, but let me give you this one, just because in case you weren't missing the Bush administration enough, this one's called Political Science. It is. No, coming up is, we've got Brad Friedman from the Brad blog. All right? So we'll be back with Brad Friedman in a moment. Radio or not.
No one likes us. I don't know why. We may not be perfect, but heaven knows we try. But all around, even our old friends put us down. Let's drop the big one, see what happens. We give them money, but are they grateful? No, they're spiteful and they're hateful. They don't respect us, so let's surprise them. We'll drop the big one and pulverize them. Asia's crowded, Europe's too old. Africa's far too hot and Canada's too cold. And South America stole our name. Let's drop the big one, there'll be no one left to blame us. We'll save Australia. Don't wanna hurt no kangaroo. We're building all American amusement park there. They got surfing too. Boom goes London and boom Paris. More room for you and more room for me. In every city, the whole world round, will just be another American town. Oh, how peaceful it will be. We'll set everybody free. You wear a Japanese kimono, baby. Shoes for me. They all hate us anyhow. So let's drop the big one now. Let's drop the big one now.
Randy Newman on Radio or Not. Political Science is the name of that one. Yeah, Randy is one of the great living American songwriters. Yes, he is. I think he's got a new album coming out, too. I'm going to be out in Los Angeles next month, and I'm just going to miss him by like 2 days. He's doing a show in L.A. Oh, well. All right. Hi, Brad Friedman.
Yes, it is.
You are live with Nicole Sandler on Radio or Not.
Great to talk to you, Nicole.
Well, it is great to talk to you, too. It's so funny. I just hung up. The last time we spoke and we talked about Andrew Breitbart, I mentioned this shouting match I got into with one night on a friend's radio show, and it was Mark Germain's show, and I'm using his streaming apparatus for his online station, talkradio1.com, so we were just reminiscing about the good times.
you had a shouting match
with Breitbart? Oh, it got really, really ugly.
Well, he is really, really ugly. He is a contemptible liar, propagandist, GOP operative, and an all-around creepy little punk, frankly.
Well, yes, he is. And you've been covering his stuff for quite a while. Brad Friedman, of course, is the man behind the Brad blog. Find it at bradblog.com. And I love the graphic you've got up there, because you have a picture of James O'Keefe all pimped out, and it says fake pimp James O'Keefe, and right next to him a picture of Andrew Breitbart, and it says actual pimp. And when I opened your website yesterday and saw it, I laughed out loud. Very funny.
Well, that's exactly what he is. I mean, he's peddling this guy who has now been accused of a federal felony. And he is now, Breitbart has admitted that he's paying him. He's on his payroll, and he's still paying him. So if that doesn't make Andrew Breitbart a pimp at this point, I don't know what does.
Well, so let's back up and talk a little bit about what happened here. Now, we first learned of James O'Keefe back when they tried to frame Acorn for helping, pimps and prostitutes in business. And what we've learned since then is that the video that they shot was so doctored, so different. Now, but they've never released the originals. Why don't you give us the backstory here?
No, they've never released the originals. And ironically, James O'Keefe, in his statement after being nabbed last week down in Louisiana, he's now calling for the prosecutor down there to release the videotapes that O'Keefe made of their attempt at manipulating, tampering with the phones. We don't know exactly what they were trying to do, but tampering with the phones of a sitting U.S. senator. So he's calling for the release of those tapes, but his raw videotapes of these phony Acorn stings, he has still yet to release that. But what we do know about those tapes, and it's important when we now look at the story that he's, now finds himself at the center of, it's important to understand just how much of a scam this whole Acorn thing was that they ran, because that was a successful scam as they see it. And nonetheless, they had to lie and doctor videos and everything else. So you can only imagine what they're willing to do and say concerning this latest scheme when they're now facing federal charges. In those Acorn tapes, I have found out over the last week or so that most people think that James O'Keefe actually showed up in this ridiculous pimp getup in the Acorn offices. And, they look at it and they say, my God, how stupid are these Acorn idiots that they didn't know that this guy was a schemer? Well, the problem is O'Keefe never showed up in that outfit in those offices. He was dressed as a pimp outside of the offices in videotape that they later inserted to make it look like the Acorn employees were so stupid that they, didn't know that this guy was a phony pimp, et cetera. So that was completely doctored. Furthermore, and this information, by the way, comes from two independent reports, one of them by the Congressional Research Service, that discusses the fact that the questions that O'Keefe and Giles, the girl who was dressed up like a prostitute, the questions that they were asking to these employees were actually overdubbed in those videotapes. So in truth, we don't even know what the Acorn employees were responding to. With all of that said, both of the reports found out that there was no violations of law by the Acorn workers shown in tapes. And yet, the conventional wisdom out there is, boy, oh boy, this great conservative journalist sure did sting Acorn. Well, they stung no one, but frankly, themselves. And as usual, the mainstream corporate media, not just Fox News, but especially Fox News, fell for it and has been putting out this nonsense as if this is what had actually happened. It didn't. It was a scam. They know it. Andrew Breitbart knows it. He's been out there lying about it, as has O'Keefe. And now that they've been busted down in this Louisiana situation, you got to take that other background into context to realize just the kind of schemers and GOP dirty tricksters that you're really dealing with here.
So now, Brad Friedman with us from Bradblog.com. So the way that this was found out, that O'Keefe was never in the pimp Halloween costume inside the Acorn offices, and that the questions had been overdubbed, they weren't what were originally asked, though that was found out during the official investigations that cleared Acorn of any wrongdoing, right?
That's correct.
Okay, because I was just wondering how you knew that. And again,
here, let me read straight from one of those reports. He says directly, Scott Harshberger, the former Massachusetts Attorney General, says, although Mr. O'Keefe appeared in all videos dressed as a pimp, in fact, when he appeared at each and every office, he was dressed like a college student in slacks and button-down shirt.
Yeah.
Now, they like to go out and they say, Acorn was trying to help set up, prostitute brothels, underage prostitution and so forth. In fact, what O'Keefe and Giles had represented to these folks at Acorn was that O'Keefe was trying to rescue Giles from an abusive pimp, and that they were trying to get her out of that house.
Mm-hmm.
They were trying to get all of these underage girls out of that house and trying to rescue them. So, I mean, this thing has just been completely turned on its head, but that's the sort of thing that we get from Andrew Breitbart, who is an unrepentant liar.
You're right. And also from the mainstream media, who nobody, except for you, Brad Blog is the only place I saw what that investigation found out. I mean, I did see that Acorn was cleared of any wrongdoing. But Brad Block is the only place I saw that O'Keefe wasn't dressed as the pimp inside the Acorn offices, and that the questions they posed were entirely different than what we heard in that doctored video.
Because they went wall to wall with those videos. And
yep.
Listen, they know this. They know that videos, you know, that TV media, the cable news, they love the videos. And especially, boy, when you add a crazy, funny-looking pimp guy in there, they really love that. So they know that this is going to attract the attention of the corporate media, and it did wall-to-wall for a number of weeks last year. But when two different reports come out clearing their names, well, it's hardly worth a mention. I don't even know if Fox News bothered to report it. I think New York Times had a mention of it right around Christmas on page 14 or something like that, buried. So it's unbelievable and appalling, the failure of the mainstream media that we're looking at, that I've been trying to yell and scream about for so many years, and that ironically now, because this is the way these guys work, ironically, the defense that James O'Keefe and Andy Breitbart, the new Orly Tates, by the way, the defense that they're putting forward is that, oh, this is all just the liberal media out there trying to get them, getting the story wrong, trying to set them up. Never mind the fact that James O'Keefe walked in, masterminded apparently, or was part of masterminding a scheme to defraud a U.S. senator, to access her her phone lines and do God knows what. They had two of these guys dressed up as telephone company employees, represented themselves as much in a federal office, got access to the phone lines of a U.S. sitting senator, asked to get access to the main phone closet, had one guy videotaping the entire scam, another guy outside the office with a listening device. I mean, can you imagine, Nicole, if this had been four operatives related, directly tied with the Democratic Party, trying to get access to the to a U.S. senator, a Republican U.S. senator? This would be wall to wall on every cable news channel, channels, and there would be you know, calls for Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, Barack Obama to be impeached.
You're right.
You know, what
You're
did they know,
right.
And when did they know it?
Yep. And Brad, let me just back up again for 1 second, because we're not totally done with the Acorn story, because although Acorn was totally cleared, we had Congress vote to defund Acorn. And I know some in Congress, like Alan Grayson, said, well, he was going to do that to try to use this because they can't just single out one group. So they were going to try to use it to defund, you know, groups like Blackwater, any groups that were convicted of wrongdoing. But what happened is this Acorn, who does good work all over the country, was defunded and Blackwater is still in business.
Well, that's right. The good news is, and again, probably may not be on your radar because it, again, wasn't reported in the media, a federal judge found that bill was unconstitutional,
right,
that it was an unconstitutional bill of attainder, that you can't single out a single person or organization in legislation. So that has been set aside. However, the damage has been done.
Mm-hmm.
Acorn has been smeared. They're still fighting to get their federal funding, which, you know, unlike the other corporations that you mentioned and that Grayson was talking about, you know, who have defrauded the federal government to the tune of billions, who have admitted as much, who have been on trial for actually killing U.S. troops in Iraq and Afghanistan,
mm-hmm.
those guys receive more federal funding in a single day than Acorn has in their lifetime.
That's
and
right.
yet, what did Acorn do? Well, so far, nothing. But if you take Andy Breitbart's logic here, saying that, well, Acorn is a criminal organization because of a handful of their employees, and this is, you know, presuming that they did anything wrong in the tapes, and they found out that they didn't, but there have been some who have committed voter registration fraud, a handful who have been turned into the authorities by Acorn themselves. But if you use his logic here, that Acorn is a criminal organization because of a handful of employees who may have done something illegal, well, then what does that make Andy Breitbart, who employs, who has now admitted that he employs James O'Keefe, mm-hmm. who is now facing a federal felony?
I say, at the very least, an accessory, right? I mean, he's the guy behind it.
Well, listen, if you use Breitbart's logic, then Breitbart is a criminal, mm-hmm. and Breitbart is, you know, as guilty and should be run out of business as a racket as he says Acorn should be. I mean, the double standard here is absolutely remarkable. He even went on air with another unrepentant right-winger, Hugh Hewitt, last week to try to save his ass. This is what Breitbart did. And, you know, Breitbart had to admit that, in fact, O'Keefe was on his payroll. And Hewitt, in trying to save Breitbart, said, and I will quote, "Lots of people work for lots of corporations and do dumb and sometimes illegal things that are not within the scope of their employment, and this was not within the scope of his employment." So he's trying to get Breitbart off the hook because, you know, O'Keefe wasn't supposed to be doing this sort of thing. Breitbart says, yes, absolutely, that is absolutely the case. Now, that is not a standard that they apply to Acorn, is it?
No.
Because when Acorn employees do something that is not within the scope of their employment, that may be dumb and sometimes illegal, they want to put Acorn out of business, don't
right.
they?
Yes, they do.
Yeah, exactly.
Brad Friedman is with us. Brad Blog is where you can find him, bradblog.com. If you have a question, you want to get in on the discussion, the number is 213-291-9410, 213-291-9410, and we can take your calls. Now, so Brad, so all right, the Acorn thing is behind us. It's months later. And how did the story with Mary Landrieu's phone office being broken into, how did that all break? Tell us the background of that story.
Well, it actually broke, and I want to make sure that I remember to note here that one of the four folks who was arrested, one of the four co-conspirators in this scheme, is actually the son of the acting U.S. attorney down there in Louisiana. So
wow.
Whether there will be a proper investigation and prosecution still remains to be seen, given that one of the perps is actually the son of the prosecutors down there.
Wow.
But what came about, the way the whole thing came about was these guys showed up. O'Keefe said he was going into the office, that he was there to wait for somebody. In the meantime, two of these hoaxers showed up dressed as phone company employees, came in, said, we were told there was a problem with the phones. Can we see the telephones? They were given access to the main telephone at the reception desk, according to the FBI affidavit. They, quote unquote, manipulated that phone. We still don't know what they did. And then they asked for access to the main phone closet elsewhere in the office. At that point, the office workers in Landrieu's office began to get suspicious, and they ended up calling authorities, and the entire scheme quickly unraveled as these guys were revealed to be frauds. So that's how they ended up getting busted. What they were actually doing there, we still don't know, although O'Keefe put out a statement at the end of last week, which, I mean, just falls apart immediately. He was claiming that what they were doing was merely going to ask the office if they had a problem with their phones, because apparently last December – constituents, the teabaggers, in fact, complained that they were having trouble getting through to the senator to, you know, give their opinion as the health care vote was moving forward. And a representative from Landrieu's office said, yes, our phones, in fact, were jammed back then during that period as that vote was coming up in December. So it's unclear what O'Keefe thought that he would find out in January about the phone system back in December. Nonetheless, when the Landrieu representative had said, quote, and this is a quote from O'Keefe's statements, quote, our lines have been jammed for weeks, unquote, O'Keefe says, writes, I decided to investigate why a representative of the people would be out of touch with her constituents for weeks because her phones were broken.
Oh, God.
Now, she never said they were broken. She
jammed.
Said the phones were jammed.
Stupid O'Keefe. A lot of people were calling. Non-stop calling. The phones were jammed. Yeah. Yeah.
And so and they had to dress up people like the village people to go in and, you know, mess with the actual phones in order to, quote unquote, ask the staff if their phones were working. That comes directly from O'Keefe. That's his statement. That's his story. He's sticking to it. So is Breitbart. And the rest of the statement, by the way, had to do with the liberal media and how they're getting the story all wrong and how, in fact, it's O'Keefe and Breitbart. They're the victims. It's just unbelievable. And they're going on the offensive and trying to make that the case, trying to put the quote-unquote liberal media on trial. This is what they do. They're professional at it. But folks need to understand that these are top-of-the-line, grade-A hoaxers. The name they used to use for them back in the Nixon era began with rat. I'll let you fill in the rest, since I don't know if you can say it or not at this point. They're rat finkers, let's put it that way. And this is exactly what they were doing, pulling off another scheme, another dirty trick. And if they're allowed to get away with it, well, you know, I don't know what to say. But given that one of them was the son of the acting U.S. attorney down there, Lord only knows what will happen, Nicole.
So they were thrown in jail, and it looked like, you know, they were going to get strung up on charges of federal wiretapping and things like that. And then the charges got sort of dropped because they determined that they were not trying to tap the phones.
So no, nothing's been dropped.
Okay.
To my knowledge, nothing has been dropped. As a matter of fact, the judge told them to, I don't know if it was an official gag order or not, but apparently the judge told them not to talk about this case, which, of course, O'Keefe promptly went about and did because he doesn't give a damn about the rule of law. They just act like it. So, no, the charges are still moving forward. It had been misreported, and I don't know if it's fair to say it's misreported, but it had been reported originally that they were attempting to bug the phones.
Right.
Now, this came from the Picayune down in Louisiana, and they've since retracted that to say that the federal charges do not, at least at this time, allege that they were trying to bug the phones, but rather they were trying to interfere with them and manipulate them, and they're also charged with misrepresenting themselves in the federal property in order to commit a felony. So what exactly that felony was they were trying to commit is still unclear at this time. So it's not completely accurate to say they weren't trying to bug the phones. At this point, we don't know what the hell they were trying to do with those phones. All we have is, by and large, O'Keefe's statement to go on. And frankly, we know he's full of crap.
But you know, if it was a Democrat doing this in a Republican senator's office, they'd be terrorists by now.
Oh yeah.
You know, they'd be screaming for the military tribunal and you know, lock them up and throw away the key.
Well, yeah, because she was, in fact, Landrieu is the chair of the Homeland Security Committee. Mm. So yeah, they would be terrorists. And the questions would be, you know, what did Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, Barack Obama know, and when did they know it? That's what, you know, there would be calls for his impeachment and everything else. This would be wall-to-wall, 24/7 news coverage. And guys like Andrew Breitbart would ensure that that was the case. And if it wasn't the case, they would be yelling and screaming that you've got a biased media. But such as the case is reversed, and it was actually four Republican Party operatives trying to get access to a Democrat's Democratic senator's phone lines. Oh, it's just another case of the liberal media gone wild as far as these lunatics are concerned.
Of course it was. Now, let me ask you one last question. Friedman from bradblog.com. I'm hearing things that there was some kind of CIA connection here. Is that for real? Or?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, there is. In fact, one of the characters, and by the way, they're not kids.
No, they're not.
Attorneys,
they're not
are
kids.
Playing them off.
They're
right.
Like 28, 29 years old. That's not
yeah,
kids 20, in
24
my book.
And 25. O'Keefe is 25.
Okay.
But Stan Dye, one of them, Stan Dye, one of the four perps, was actually working for the CIA in a program to help recruit new intelligence folks. He claims, I believe, that he was not part of the CIA, but who knows, one way or another, he was working with them, with the U.S. intelligence in some fashion. And there seems to be a connection with another one of the folks as well, and I'm trying to remember if it was Flanagan, who was the son of the U.S. acting U.S. attorney, or if it was another one, Basel, but who was also involved with the Defense Department in some fashion. So, yeah, there's a lot of questions that need to be answered here. And like I say, I can only imagine the way the media would be going crazy had the situation been reversed. But some answers need to come forward. And right now, the only one who's really talking, for the most part, is O'Keefe. And I think he's in a situation where he, you know, kind of has to, even though he may have violated a court order in doing so. But there's been so much criticism and so much question about Andrew Breitbart, about their, phony propaganda website, biggovernment.com,
mm-hmm.
that I think they had no choice but to come out and put out a cover story out there, no matter how quickly it would fall apart. And it certainly has. And we've covered it at bradblog.com, as has Marcy Wheeler over at Empty Wheel, who just destroyed O'Keefe's pathetic little statement. I mean, she just tore it apart. It makes no sense. But, you know, when you're a teabagger or a teabugger in this case, I guess you don't have to make sense. You just have to trick your phony teabag followers into believing you make sense and that it's all the liberal media's fault. You know, everything else.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
This is, I guess, to be continued because, and the question is, as you said, what happens to these guys now? And, you look at the disparity in the way people are treated. If they
yep.
were Democrats and it was a Republican senator, I don't think these guys would be out of jail right now. I think they'd be held without bond. It would be a different story. We'd be talking about.
And if they had been of, Arabic descent,
oh my God,
they'd likely be in Gitmo by
You're
now.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, there will be more on this story. I believe they face a federal arraignment on February 12, unless something changes, unless one of these little cowards starts singing at this point, because I do suspect there were a whole lot more folks who were in on this particular conspiracy, and it is a criminal conspiracy. So we'll see what happens in the days ahead. As a matter of fact, Sean Hannity will be having the accused felon, James O'Keefe, on Fox News tonight, and I'm sure they'll be doing a lot of truth massaging there.
I thought there was a gag order.
Yeah, well, it's okay if you're Republican. Laws, the rule of law, that sort of thing, that only applies to Democrats. You know that, Nicole.
I know. I keep trying to think about what the United States of America used to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, keep trying to remember that because apparently we're way beyond that. But we need to keep banging on this. We need to keep pointing out to folks the misconceptions on the whole Acorn scam, because it really does underlie, if they're willing to lie that much about a successful scam, imagine what they will say at this point about, once they're caught in a federal felony. That needs to be understood, and even the broader picture needs to be understood. This entire scam, this is about politics. It's about electoral politics, and the reason that Acorn has been targeted the way they have is because they had the temerity to go out and register millions of legal low- and middle-income voters who happen to vote Democratic more than Republican. So Acorn must be done away with, according to these guys.
And that's exactly the reason. That is the
yep.
one and only reason they targeted Acorn. All right.
That's it.
Brad Friedman from bradblog.com, thank you so much for joining us tonight, and we'll talk again soon.
Give me a shout anytime I can help, Nicole.
You got it. Thanks so much.
You bet.
Bye-bye. All right, there you have it. Yeah, Brad Friedman does such a great job on this, on all things election related. He is one of the good ones. All right, let's do this. We will take a break. And, I think I just missed a call. All right, let's take a break, and we'll come back, hopefully, with a look at the news of the day on Radio or Not. The always amazing Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band.
I read the news today, oh boy.
All right, it is that time again. Time to check in with Victoria Jones from the Talk Radio News Service at talkradionews.com. Hey there, Victoria. How are you doing on this Monday?
I'm doing just great. How are you?
Hanging in there.
Good.
I know it's been a busy, busy week in Washington. The president's on a roll, huh?
President's on a roll. He had his rumble with the House Republicans on Friday and released his $3.8 trillion budget to Congress today.
Yes, he did. He got up and made about a 10-minute speech outlining some of the provisions in the budget. And if we have time later on, I'll play it. But give us the news version of it.
Well, he's hoping to move the nation from recession to recovery, basically. He wants to create millions of new jobs and spark investments in education, clean energy, infrastructure, and research. basically big investments in education, $100 billion to create jobs through small business tax cuts and investments in infrastructure and clean energy, extension for another year of the Making Work Pay tax credit to 110 million families, elimination of the tax on capital gains from new investments in small businesses. There is this three-year freeze on non-defense and homeland security spending, allowing the Bush tax cuts to expire for households making over $250,000.
Yeah, well, that's good. By the way, just a quick aside, did you hear what Rush Limbaugh said about people making over $250,000 a year?
No.
All right, here, I got to play this for you. Here's Rush Limbaugh from today's show.
Ladies and gentlemen, $250,000 is not wealthy. And I know that you families, $250,000, you're not wealthy. Wealthy, but Obama calls the Democrats have always called those kind of people wealthy. And they will. $250,000 family of four, they will complain about their taxes going.
So if you're a family of four and you make $250,000 a year, you're not wealthy.
Well, you know, you're not rolling in it. You are doing better than somebody who's making $50,000.
I would say, especially in these economic times, people who are making $250,000 a year are doing just fine, thank you very much, and can afford to pay a few more dollars in taxes.
They absolutely can, and they're probably glad to.
Yes, I think so too. Unless your name is Rush Limbaugh.
Well, what does he know about money these days? What does he know? When
he's hoarding
got as much
it all.
As he has,
right.
How can you understand?
No, he can't. He doesn't know what it's like to be in the real world.
No.
All right. So anyway, back to it. So finally, the Bush tax cuts are going to expire. When do they expire?
I believe they expire. Now, I could be wrong on this, so I'm not going to say. I want to say the end of the year, but I could be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to say.
Okay. But soon he'll let them expire. I wish he would just repeal them now, but he likes to make nice to the Republicans.
He is trying to work with the Republicans. That was something that came up again and again and again today during the briefing, but it doesn't seem to be going so well. I mean, one of the things that he's talking about is this bipartisan commission to work on bringing down to come up with between $180 billion and $190 billion in cuts to meet the president's targeted cuts.
Mm-hmm.
So they're basically going to sort of forward deficit reduction proposals to Congress after the midterm elections.
Right.
Well, and congressional leaders have promised the president that they'll submit the recommendations to an up or down vote in the lame duck session of Congress. Well, the problem with it is now that apparently some Republican leaders are coming under pressure from conservatives to not cooperate with the commission because there's a possibility that there might be recommendations for tax increases.
Unbelievable. You know, and I really thought, I mean, I was very impressed with the president's appearance on Friday at the House Republican Conference. What are they? The House Republican Conference, their little retreat.
Yes, the retreat.
And I thought, you know what? This is the guy I voted for. As much as I've been criticizing him lately, he was smart. He thinks on his feet. He's got all the facts. He knows what he's talking about. I may disagree with some of his plans and some of his programs, but at least I have confidence in this guy that he knows that he's thinking things through. Again, I may not like the outcome, but at least, you know, he showed himself to be a leader and to be strong and knowledgeable and smart. And I thought the Republicans looked like a bunch of twits. I thought they looked like idiots. But I thought maybe finally, you know what, my boyfriend yelled at me. We almost had an argument over this. He's like, why is he even doing this? Why? Enough already. Gee, he should just ram through whatever he wants to do like Bush did. And I said, you know what, he's trying, and I think this should be his last-ditch effort. Now, if they're still going to snub their noses at him and still be the party of no after that, I think that he needs to ram everything down their throats that he can. And again, he needs to keep in mind that they've got 59 seats in the Senate. They may not have their so-called filibuster-proof majority, but it's still a bigger majority than any party has had in many, many years.
This is the thing. It's 59 votes.
I know.
It's a considerable number of votes, but we're living at a time where you need 60.
But then they need to change it.
There's no cooperation.
Then they need to change it.
That's a whole other conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a big one.
Yes, a huge one. And that's going to be the ongoing debate. But I love the fact that the president addressed it during the State of the Union.
He did, yeah.
Yep. So, yeah. You know, we'll see. What will happen remains to be seen. But you're saying that the indications are that they're still going to vote as this one solid block of no, huh?
Well, not necessarily a solid block of no, but there doesn't seem to be an awful lot of movement towards yes, let's put it that way.
Yeah. Oh, well, all right, we'll see what happens. So what is the next step on the budget? And now it's got to go through both houses for approval?
It goes to Congress, and they start knocking it about, basically.
So like sort of any bill has to go through its paces,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, they knock it about, and they do things to it, and they change it around, and it comes out looking nothing like it looked like when it went in.
All right.
Because they don't like the cuts, and they don't like this, and they don't like that, and he proposes things, and they change it.
Meanwhile, they want a spending freeze, but they don't like the cuts that he's going to make to the programs in their states. And that's what he tried to tell them at the thing on Friday also, is that, you know, sometimes you know, you say you don't want earmarks, but I get just as many earmark requests from you guys. And when it's a project that's in your backyard, all of a sudden it's not a silly, stupid earmark. It's not pork. It's something for your community. So anyway, anything else, Victoria Jones?
Well, a couple of things happening tomorrow. One is that Congress is going to hold its first hearing in 17 years on Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Finally. When is that happening?
Tomorrow.
Wow. Okay, that was quick.
Yep. Defense Secretary Robert Gates and Joint Chief Staff Chairman Admiral Mike Mullen will be testifying. It is an overall hearing on defense-related issues before the Senate Armed Services Committee.
Okay.
And into it will go about an hour on Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
All right. Well, that's better than nothing. It's a step in the right direction.
It's going to be a very interesting hearing. Very
yes.
interesting hearing.
Will that be will that be on C-SPAN?
I don't know whether it will, because if C-SPAN is in session, if the Senate's in session, C-SPAN 2 is the Senate.
Right.
So I don't think there's space on C-SPAN.
Well, maybe
for it to
C-SPAN
be.
3, but nobody gets C-SPAN 3.
But you know, something as big as that might be on CNN.
Yep. Oh, maybe. Well, and it'll be online, if perhaps, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. It might be online.
Okay. All right. Well, that's definitely one to watch out for tomorrow. Anything else?
Yeah. Three cabinet members and six members of Congress are meeting with Michelle Obama tomorrow to discuss policy on childhood obesity. And this is shaping up to be the First Lady's signature movement.
Okay.
She is really making this her issue. And so you've got the Agriculture Secretary, the Education Secretary, and Health and Human Services Secretary, and all kinds of other senators and members of Congress. And they're going to have an hour-long meeting to discuss combined efforts to create national awareness of childhood obesity. This is something that she started the campaign last week, and she intends to tackle this hard.
Okay,
so
good.
So I just wanted to mention that that's happening.
Well, what they need to do is get the kids off the fast food and serve better, you know, healthier foods at school. And, boy, they would change it right away. But, you know, because people can't afford healthy foods are more expensive than the cheap junk food, and that's why people who are the poorest seem to be the most obese.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right.
Exactly.
Victoria Jones from the Talk Radio News Service. Find them at talkradionews.com. Thanks, Victoria.
Thank you.
I'll talk soon. All right. We're going to we've got the interview coming up with John Perkins. His follow-up to Confessions of an Economic Hitman is called Hoodwinked. An Economic Hitman reveals why the world financial markets imploded and what we must do to remake them. I spoke with him this afternoon, and I recorded the interview. I got to do one thing before we hit it. So, you know, I talked about this the other night, you know, how a bill becomes law. And I said, be careful, I'm going to sing the Schoolhouse Rock song for you. I'm just a bill. And, but I figured better than that, we'll do this.
Woo, you sure got to climb a lot of steps to get to this Capitol building here in Washington. Well, I wonder who that sad little scrap of paper is.
Well, maybe I can make it down
there. I'm a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill.
Yes, it is.
And I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well,
yes,
it's
it is.
A long, long journey to the Capitol City. It's a long, long wait while I'm sitting in committee. But I know I'll be a law someday. At least I hope and pray that I will. But today I am still just a bill.
Bill, you certainly have a lot of patience and courage.
Well, I got this far. When I started, I wasn't even a bill. I was just an idea. Some folks back home decided they wanted a law passed, so they called their local congressman, and he said, you're right, there ought to be a law. And he sat down and wrote me out and introduced me to Congress, and I became a bill. And I'll remain a bill until they decide to make me a law. I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I got as far as Capitol Hill. Well, now I'm stuck in committee, and I'll sit here and wait while a few key congressmen discuss and debate whether they should let me be a law. How I hope and pray that they will, but today I am still just a bill.
Listen to those congressmen arguing. Is all that discussion and debate about you?
Yeah, I'm one of the lucky ones. Most bills never even get this far. I hope they decide to report on me favorably, otherwise I may die.
Die?
Yeah, die in committee. Oh, but it looks like I'm gonna live. Now I go to the House of Representatives and they vote on me.
If they vote yes, what happens?
Then I go to the Senate and the whole thing starts all over again.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. I'm just a bill, yes, I'm only a bill. And if they vote for me on Capitol Hill, well, then I'm off to the White House where I wait in a line with a lot of other bills for the president to sign. And if he signs me, then I'll be a law. How I hope and pray that he will. But today I am still just a bill.
You mean even if the whole country says you should be a law, the president can still say no?
Yes, that's called a veto. If the president vetoes me, I have to go back to Congress and they vote on me again, and by that time you're so
by old. That time, it's very unlikely that you become a law. It's not easy to become a law, is it?
No, but how I hope and pray that I will. But today I am still just a bill.
He signed your bill, now you're a law.
Oh, yeah.
Unless it's 2010 and you got Republicans in the Senate and they decide to filibuster, but the Democrats don't really make them filibuster and they just go through the motions and, yeah. Or as Gimu wrote in the chat room, bills are only to kill, just to kill if the Republicans get their will. Yeah, Schoolhouse Rock. I love Schoolhouse Rock. We just need to update that one. All right. Now, here's my dilemma. I taped this interview with John Perkins earlier, and of course, I didn't get to, I forgot to cue it up to the right point. So you may get a little bit of our chatter beforehand, but let's see. I tried at the beginning of it. I know, not very professional of me, but let's see where we are.
Okay.
Okay, Thursday night. We're talking about Thursday night. I'll tell you right now. You know, I do the show from Miami, and John Perkins lives a little bit further up the coast in like the West Palm Beach area. He is on a tour. He's doing the book tour for Hoodwinked, the new book, and he's going to be at Books and Books in Coral Gables this Thursday night at 8 p.m. So if you're in South Florida, this is going to be a fascinating speech. I don't think I can go because I don't get off the air till 8, and he's starting at 8, and it's a good hour from here. But anyway, if you're around, go check him out. All right. Let's see if this is the beginning of the interview.
He's
really?
He's a good friend. And
he was telling me about how the last time he was there, Sting showed up. Yeah, his friend Sting and his wife Trudy Styler were in town, and they went to see John Perkins last time he was at Books and Books. All right. Is this the beginning of the interview? All right. So we'll start taping now. Here we go. Folded. now. And again, this will air tonight. Now, just so you know, I was on, you know, just a week and a half. Okay.
So sad.
Yeah, it's, well, it was.
Oh,
we're talking about Air America. I feel terrible that I forgot to cue in here. So unprofessional of me. All right, well,
here we go.
And I'm going to tape now. I am so excited to speak with our next guest. John Perkins, I've been aware of for a few years now. I read his the last book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, and when this new one came out, Hoodwinked, An Economic Hitman Reveals Why the World Financial Markets Imploded and What We Need to Do to Remake Them. I couldn't wait to get him on the phone, and I'm thrilled that John Perkins joins us tonight on Radio or Not. John, your life really has been a roller coaster, hasn't it?
It has, Nicole. Yes, that's one way to look at it.
So tell us, for those who aren't familiar with the Confessions of an Economic Hitman, what is an economic hitman? Is that a real term, or is that one you made up for your books?
Well, it's a term we use, sort of tongue-in-cheek, like, you know, spook or spy or CIA agent. You know, they don't go around saying I'm a CIA agent, and tongue-in-cheek people may refer to them as spooks or spies. And my official title was chief economist. I had several dozen people working for me on my staff at a consulting firm, a major international consulting firm, Charles T. Main. But we called ourselves, we sort of tongue-in-cheek said, you know, EHMs, economic hitmen. And what we do is basically use economics to bring countries into the empire. And it's the first empire, really, that's been built by economics more than by the military. When we work, I think, many different ways, but perhaps the most common way is that we'll identify countries, usually third world countries, with resources our corporations covet, like oil. And then we'll arrange a large loan to that country through the World Bank or one of its sisters, and yet the money doesn't actually go to the country. Instead, it goes to our own corporations to build infrastructure projects in that country, huge projects like power plants and highways and ports and industrial parks that benefit a few wealthy families in the country as well as our own corporations, but don't help the majority of the people who are too poor to, you know, use ports or highways or electricity. But the whole country is left holding a huge debt that it can't repay. And so we at some point go back and say, since you can't repay your debts, give us oil. Sell your oil to our oil companies real cheap without any environmental restrictions. Allow us to build a military plant on your base, things like that. And then the few occasions when we fail, and I talk in my latest book, Hoodwinked, a lot about how I failed in Panama with Omar Torrijos and in Ecuador with the democratically elected president, Jaime Roldos, I wasn't able to get them to do these things. Then the jackals go in, either overthrow governments or assassinate their leaders. And in the case of both Roldos of Ecuador and Torrijos of Panama, they were assassinated because they refused to be corrupted.
So now here's the sticky question, and I don't know that you can actually answer it for certain, 100%, with 100% certainty. But when this happens, these are corporations that go into these countries and try to cut these deals with the governments to basically get them in an untenable economic situation where they wind up in this deep debt. And in order to climb out, they wind up having to sell their natural resources or whatever it is. What is the government's role in this, the U.S. government? Do they just turn the other way? Are they complicit in it? How does that work?
They're very complicit. Often this is done under the State Department auspices, or sometimes Defense Department, or sometimes Treasury. USAID, our official aid agency, gets very involved in this. So these things are done in deep cooperation with the government. And, you know, we just experienced something in Honduras like this, where the democratically elected President Zelaya was overthrown in a military coup because he had the gall to increase the minimum wage by 60%. Dole, Chiquita, Cargill, Kraft, Russell Athletics and other sweatshop shirt makers and athletic sports equipment makers were incensed, and they tried to convince Zelaya to change his ways. He didn't, and so there was a military coup led by a general who was trained at the U.S. School of the Americas with CIA support. So you've got big U.S. corporations lined up trying to make things happen the way they want them to happen. And the CIA comes in, the State Department gets involved, USAID gets involved, and there's this real team effort. And I think we have to remember, Nicole, that at the very top, these people all work for the same people ultimately, you know. So right now, the people in the top of the agricultural department under Obama come out of Monsanto and Cargo and Kraft and Chiquita, and the people running the financial section of the White House come out of Goldman Sachs and other Wall Street firms. So there's this constant, you know, revolving door where the people at the top work for government, and then they work for the corporations, and then they work for government again, and then back to the corporations.
Wow. Now, John Perkins is with us. The new book is Hoodwinked, An Economic Hitman Reveals Why the World Financial Markets Imploded and What We Need to Do to Remake Them. And before we get to the remaking them part, I still want to delve a little further into how and why the markets imploded. You open this book with a story of you going to Iceland, into Reykjavik, Iceland. And we heard as you know, our economics system here was just imploding, that Iceland's economy completely, I mean, totally imploded. I mean, we sort of headed it off before the bottom fell out, but Iceland didn't have that, I don't know, it's not good luck, but Iceland didn't recover. What happened over there?
Well, yeah, you know, about three and a half years ago, a documentary team from Iceland came to my home in Florida and interviewed me about what was going on in Iceland, about how huge loans were being taken out by Iceland to build big hydroelectric projects to feed energy to Alcoa and other aluminum companies, and asked me what I thought was going to happen, and I said, well, it'll probably bankrupt you. That would be my prediction. At that time, Iceland was ranked number 3 in the world on a per capita income basis by the World Bank, the third wealthiest country in the world on a per capita basis. And then it went bankrupt exactly because of that. The economic hitmen went in, the equivalent of them, and convinced Iceland to build these huge hydroelectric projects, taking out massive loans just to serve aluminum companies, primarily Alcoa and Alcon. And the aluminum companies got a wonderful deal, but as it turned out, every time Iceland sold them a kilowatt hour, Iceland lost money. And wow. So it eventually went bankrupt from this very, very wealthy country. It is now a bankrupt country, essentially. And, you know, so they invited me back when they premiered this documentary in Iceland in 2009, just about 6 months ago, invited me back to give talks there, and I was interviewed in the film, you know, two or three years earlier saying what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. It was exactly what had happened.
So Alcoa had a big part in bankrupting this whole country, and you say they did it with the explicit knowledge and even support of the U.S. government.
Yeah, Alcoa, once again, is one of these companies that has tremendous power, and it was the whole aluminum industry. And they were certainly working very closely with the IMF, with the big banks, and making this happen.
So what is don't they bear any of the responsibility for helping rebuild? I mean, you talk about what we need to do to remake the world financial markets that have imploded. Doesn't Alcoa and the United States government and the IMF bear some culpability here?
Absolutely. They're not accepting it, and in fact they're doing quite the opposite. My advice when I was there in Iceland was don't pay the loans. The IMF was saying now you can refinance and you've got to pay off these loans, but you're going to have to nationalize certain sectors of your economy, et cetera, et cetera. The same old story that always happens when refinancing occurs. And I'm saying don't do it. Just don't pay off your debts. And there's precedent for this. Ecuador, a country where I originally got started as a Peace Corps volunteer and I spent a lot of time. Ecuador has a new president, Rafael Correa. Well, he's now in his second term. He's not that new now. But he's an amazing very enlightened, very knowledgeable man. He has a PhD in economics from the University of Illinois. He says, you know, I'm a capitalist, but I don't see any reason why we can't use capitalism to use our own resources, primarily oil, to pull our own people up by their bootstraps, not just make foreign oil companies richer and richer and richer. This oil has to help our people. And he's saying, the IMF is saying Ecuador owes a lot of money to the IMF and the World Bank and other banks. And Correa, who again has a PhD in economics, is saying, we're not paying. We don't really owe that money. You know, there was a group of military dictators that were supported by the CIA, put in by the CIA back in the 70s. They signed off on these loans. And the people never benefited. And so maybe these military dictators owe the money, if you can find them. They're now either dead or living in Miami or Switzerland or someplace. The World Bank owes these loans. It should take responsibility. The IMF, the U.S. government, and maybe John Perkins, who was involved in convincing us, owes this money.
Mm.
But what's for sure is that my people, the Ecuadorian people, do not owe this money. We never agreed to it. We never get any benefits out of it, really. And so he's saying we're not paying. And Argentina has done something similar in the past, and so have another number of other companies. And my advice to Iceland was to do this. And I know that they're debating that right now as to what to do. But there's huge reluctance on the part of countries. They see if they do this that they're going to fall in disgrace amongst the international financial community. And ultimately, they usually don't, because people usually understand that what's going on. But there's a huge fear, you know. There's this stigma around not paying off our debts, whether we're individuals or whether we're countries.
Right. I got that, because a lot of there are many people out there, including members of Congress, like Congresswoman Marcy Kaptur from Ohio is telling people who are in danger of being foreclosed upon not to leave. Just don't pay and don't leave your house. Because
exactly. And you know, we saw in Michael Moore's film, mm-hmm. How when she said that, and people in Miami did exactly that. They wouldn't leave, and the sheriffs came to try to take them out, and the sheriff's deputies, and eventually the sheriff's deputies sort of agreed, and they left them alone.
Right, because you can't find who actually owns the loan, because so many of them have been split up and put into all kinds of different security packages that it's impossible to retrace it back and find out who holds the actual loan.
And in fact, as I talk about in Hoodwink, you know, this is exactly what's now come home to roost. The economic hitmen have hit us in the United States the same way that they hit Iceland, that they've hit Ecuador, that they've hit so many countries around the world. You know, just one of many examples is convincing people that they could afford a $500,000 house when they really could only afford a $300,000 house. But telling them, you know, tighten your belt for a few years, pay the mortgage on the $500,000 house, and in 5 years, it'll be worth $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
You're building tremendous equity. And banks convinced them to do that. And then the bottom fell out of the market. That house is now worth $200,000. The person's still paying a mortgage on $500,000 or gone bankrupt. And the banks now are closing in, and they're buying these properties at 10 cents on the dollar. So something very, very similar has happened in the United States. The tools that we honed in the third world are now being used against us here in the United States.
All right, so John Perkins is with us. Again, the new book is Hoodwinked. So I want to get on to how we turn things around. But before we get there, what turned you around? What made you go from an economic hitman to somebody who is spilling the beans on who is responsible for the mess we're in and how to fix it?
Well, it's kind of a long story, Nicole, but I go into detail in Hoodwinked. But to make the long story short, throughout the 10 years I was an economic hitman, my conscience continually get the better and better of me. I began to really understand what was going on. And by the end of the 10 years, I really saw what was happening. And, you know, at the beginning, our business schools teach us that investing in these huge infrastructure projects increases economic growth in these countries. And statistically, you can show that it does. But what the statistics don't show is that it also doesn't reach to the poor people. And so in that process, the rich get a lot richer and more powerful, and the poor get a lot poorer, and the gap between the two keeps widening. If you get a much larger percentage of people in the poor classes, the middle class begins to disappear, as it has in places like Venezuela and so much of Latin America and Africa and many other countries. And so over those 10 years, I began to see this more and more clearly. And at the end, I also was privy to some conversations that led me to understand that we were prepared to assassinate those leaders that didn't buy into the program. Up until that point, it had been kind of an intellectual discussion for me that, you know, I knew that we'd taken out Allende in Chile and Arbenz in Guatemala and Mossadegh in Iran. Everybody who reads history knows that. But it's hard to make it personal. Became very personal for me. I began to feel like I was truly an accomplice in this terrible thing that was going on. And finally, I saw the light and got out.
Great. And you've done a wonderful service. I mean, there are a handful of people like you. On the healthcare front, I'll point to Wendell Potter, somebody who came from, you know, the belly of the beast to come out on the other side and say, look, this is what the health insurance industry is doing. And this is how we have to fix it. So, you know, I so appreciate the work you're doing. John Perkins with us here on Radio or Not. Now, in the new book, Hoodwinked, you come up with a solution. You say if a small percentage of the population consciously takes action, we can succeed. You have a strategy for implementing change, and that you have five different arenas of action?
Yes, right. Yeah, and I think, you know, readers can realize that every one of us can take at least one of those actions, one of those five, or we could take all five or anything in between. They're powerful. We do have control over this. I think one of the most important things to recognize is that for the first time in history, an empire has been created primarily without the military, but through economics.
Mm-hmm.
And it is run by big corporations. So we're at a time in history that's kind of like when city-states became nations, except now the nations have become relatively unimportant. President Obama really doesn't have that much power over all of this. As we talked earlier, he's very controlled by the big corporations. The corporations are running it, and we really need to understand that, and also that the corporations are dependent on us. We're not being forced by the military to buy their goods and services. We buy their goods and services. And they are driven, you know, by this one economic principle, which really took hold in 1980 when Ronald Reagan officially adopted Milton Friedman's School of Economics, rejecting the old Keynesian school, which had prevailed through since the time of the Depression up until 1980. And the Friedman economics was really running us economic hitmen in the 70s, but it became part of U.S. accepted policy in the 80s under Reagan and then under every president since, Democrat and Republican alike, including the current one, Obama. And really what this philosophy of Milton Friedman says is that the only responsibility of business is to maximize profits, regardless of the social and environmental costs. That's the first premise of three. The second one is businesses shouldn't be regulated because that gets in the way of making profit. And third is that everything should be run by business, the jails, the schools, even the military. And we're seeing the military becoming increasingly privatized
mm-hmm.
even now. So this premise has really brought us to this collapse, economic collapse today. It's brought us to a very unjust and unsustainable world. And my premise is that, you know, we've got to simply get these corporations to redefine this, to move into another form of economics. This form's only been around since 1980. It's predatory. It replaced Keynesian economics, which was much more compassionate. Let's go back to a more compassionate belief that corporations are there to serve a public interest, that they can make profits, but only within the context of creating a sustainable, just, and peaceful world. For my grandson, I have a 2.5-year-old grandson, for my grandson. And to realize that the only way my grandson is going to have that kind of world is if every child on the planet has that kind of world, because we're living for the first time in history in a tiny planet that's extremely integrated and interrelated. We can't have homeland security until we recognize that the entire planet is our homeland. And that's new. It wasn't true before, but it's absolutely true today that we've got to take a global approach to this. And so let's commit ourselves to understanding that the marketplace is democratic, that whenever you buy something or don't buy something, you're voting, and let's use our votes wisely. actually, that's just one of the five approaches of, you know, being very conscious consumers and letting companies know. So you don't buy from Nike because they still have sweatshops in Indonesia. They still have slave labor. Send them an email and tell them. And if enough people do that, Nike's going to have to change their policies. They're going to have to change those sweatshops into legitimate factories that pay decent wages and have decent working conditions.
I agree. Now, how do we find out about these companies? See, here's the problem. John Perkins is with us. I think with the Supreme Court ruling of a couple of weeks ago that basically did away with all the controls on corporate contributions to campaigns, it's going to get a hell of a lot worse before it gets better, because the corporations, although under the eyes of the law they may be persons, but they don't have a conscience like you and I do.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, that Supreme Court decision is outrageous, and there's certainly been a huge uproar. I hope it'll be reversed. You know, it's terrible. It's disgusting. We should be going in the opposite direction. You know, for the first 100 years of this country, when the United States was the United States, for the first 100 years, no corporation could get a charter to operate unless it proved that it was going to serve the public interest. Charters, on average, lasted 10 years, and then the corporation had to go back and prove that it had served the public interest, and would continue to do so. That ended in the 1880s when the Supreme Court decided, it wasn't actually a decision, it was just kind of a ruling that corporations had the rights of individuals. And that changed everything. And now the Supreme Court has taken this another step. And I think what we need to push for is to go back to the old idea that corporations must serve a public interest. And in fact, when I was in business school in the 60s, I was taught that a good corporate CEO takes care of the long-term interests of his company, the long-term sustainability, takes care of his employees, his customers, as well as stockholders, and the community that the corporation is located in. The corporation needs to be a good citizen community.
Isn't that interesting? Because when I was in college, I studied broadcasting. And radio stations and television stations were licensed to operate in the public convenience, interest, and necessity. And you had to prove that you were serving the local community. There was something called, I'm forgetting the name of it. But we would have to go out into the community and find out what the top issues were and prove that we were serving those issues. It's amazing how things have changed, all in favor of the corporations and against the regular people. And we need, as people, to take back control, whether it's the broadcast entities that are using the public airwaves or the businesses that are licensed to serve or to run in our communities.
Right. And we the people need to get back involved in this, Nicole. I mean, it's always been we the people that have done this. You know, presidents and Supreme Courts and Congress people pass laws that support what the people want. We need to let our corporations, our government, know that we want something different. We no longer want to operate under Milton Friedman's idea of economics. We need a new type of economics. And we the people have to do it. And women didn't get the right to vote because Woodrow Wilson was pro-suffrage. He wasn't. Women get the right to vote because they protested for it for a long time, and when Wilson was president, he went around the United States trying to drum up support for sending Art Boys to Europe to defend democracy during World War I in Europe. Women followed him everywhere, screaming and chanting and carrying placards that said, "We're not sending our men to Europe to defend democracy when half of us in the United States can't vote, we women." Mm-hmm. And Wilson got it, came around. You know, we've seen this time and time again. We didn't get out of Vietnam because Nixon was anti-war. We the people forced it to happen, and on. There's so many cases like that. Rivers that got cleaned up because we demanded the corporation stop polluting them back in the 70s. And now, more recently, getting trans fats out of food and hormones out of chickens because we've demanded it. Now we've got to ratchet this up and demand that the Supreme Court go in the other direction and, you know, let's let corporations make a profit, but only within the context of being socially and environmentally responsible, creating a world that our children and grandchildren are going to want to inherit.
Right. Well, is there any easy way to find out information about the businesses that we do frequent?
There's a lot of information, and in Hoodwinked, I have a lot of references. You can go to my website, johnperkins.org, or even better, the nonprofit that I founded, dreamchange.org, and there's a lot of links on there. There is no really simple matter. I'm pushing for that. If any of your listeners out there are entrepreneurs, I'd really encourage them to get into this. People who are looking at having everything that we buy have a barcode on it that you could hold your cell phone up to, and it would tell you the life cycle of a product, who made it, whether they were fairly treated and fairly paid at the beginning and at the end. What happened to it at the end? Is it being recycled? And I think we need something like that. And I would really encourage some of your listeners to get deeply involved in this. There's room to make a lot of profit. They have a good business serving the public interest that way. But that's not to make an excuse to say that there's no information. Now, there's plenty of information. And go to dreamchange.org and the many links on there to find out, where you can buy tennis shoes, where you can buy anything that's made with a social and environmental conscience. And, I think we have to accept that probably no company out there is perfect. Who is perfect? But what we need to do is support the ones that are trying, that are really making an effort to do a better job. And let them know that we're supporting them, and let their competitors know that we're not going to go to them anymore until they turn things around.
Right. That's some great advice. And it'll take a little more work on our part, but that's what it's going to take to turn things around.
It's always taken work. Look at the work it took to get us out of the Vietnam War. Look at the work it took the women to get the right to vote. Go on and clean up rivers, on and on. Every victory like that, it's taken work. But we also have fun doing it. I think that's an important part of it. To realize that Howard Zinn, he was a professor of mine and a mentor of mine. He was a professor of mine when I was at BU, just died a couple of days ago at 87. Yep. And he had this amazing quote, that went kind of like this, is there's nothing more rewarding in life than to devote your energies and time to making a better world.
That says it all, and it's true, and especially those of us who have young children or grandchildren, we look at it every day and say, what kind of world am I leaving my kid?
Right, right,
yep.
Exactly.
All right. Well, John Perkins, I will put links on my blog to your both websites, johnperkins.org and dreamchange.org. The new book is Hoodwinked, An Economic Hitman Reveals Why the World Financial Markets Imploded, and what we need to do to remake them. For those people down here in Miami, where I do the show from, John's going to be at Books and Books in Coral Gables this Thursday night, February 4th at 8 p.m. It's always a great place to, you can lose yourself inside Books and Books, and they bring in great speakers, as is evidenced by John Perkins there this Thursday night. I'll put the details for that on my blog as well. John, it was a real pleasure speaking with you. I'm loving the book. I can't wait to finish it, and I hope we can talk again.
Thanks, Nicole. And incidentally, I'm on a sort of a national book tour. I'm headed out to California and Phoenix and many places. So people listening from other parts of the country can go to my website, johnperkins.org, and get the schedule there. I'd love to be face-to-face with some of your listeners. Thanks for doing all the good work that you do.
Oh, terrific. And I'll make sure the book tour is highlighted on the blog as well. John Perkins, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
So there you have it. And yes, there are links not only to his website, but also dreamchange.org and to the tour schedule, his book tour schedule, on my blog at radioornot.com. All right. Now it's your turn. We can take calls now. 213-291-9410 is the phone number. I put together some clips from the president's speech today introducing the budget, and I've got the whole thing queued up, the thing he did on Friday with the Republican House conference that I thought was excellent. So if you want to weigh in on any of that, I do have a question for you though. At the beginning of his presentation today, when he laid out his new budget, I'm just going to play you the opening statement, and well, the question might be evident at the end of this little piece here. Have a listen.
This morning I sent a budget to Congress for the coming year. It's a budget that reflects the serious challenges facing the country. We're at war. Our economy's lost 7 million jobs over the last 2 years. And our government is deeply in debt after what can only be described as a decade of profligacy.
Okay, profligacy. I'm sorry. I'm a pretty educated woman. I've got a great vocabulary. I don't know what profligacy means. Can anybody in either of the chat rooms or call 213-291-9410? I'd look it up, but I don't even know how to spell it. Profligacy. All right. Maybe you can help me. All right. I'm going to play a quick message here and come back and see if anyone gets the answer for me. Here, where did I put it? Here it is.
Your iPhone or iPod Touch is now a radio receiver that can pick up over 12,000 radio stations worldwide, including TalkRadio1.com and some satellite radio shows. You can listen live to any of our fine programs from anywhere in the world. The link to this killer app is on the right side of the TalkRadio1.com page. From there, you'll download this app for just $5, and this program would make a great gift for anyone with an iPhone or iPod Touch. Give the gift of Talk Radio 1 and 12,000 other stations, but remember to use our link for this and all iTunes purchases to help support the fine programming on TalkRadio1.com.
Okay, there you have it. All right, so do that. And I will also wind up putting that link on RadioOrNot.com so you can get it from there. If you got an iPhone or an iPod Touch, you can get the app to play. All right, profligacy, P-R-O-F-I-L-G-A-C-Y. And it means given over to reckless or given over to dissipation, dissolute, recklessly wasteful, wildly extravagant. All right, so I get it. Yeah, the Bush administration, what they did, shameless dissoluteness, reckless extravagance, great abundance. I guess that's what George Bush did. He indulged in all kinds of wild spending, going against what Republicans call for, right? And yet they have the gall to say, no, we give us back the government because we have greater fiscal control, greater fiscal responsibility. We are more fiscally conservative. But that's not what we saw during 8 years of the Bush presidency. I'll play a little more of what Obama said as he introduced this the budget today. And, you know, I'm still reading this book that I interviewed the author last week, Nothing to Fear, FDR's Inner Circle and the 100 Days That Created Modern America. By the way, there are links to all these books at RadioOrNot.com. So if you want to purchase them and do the purchase through Radio or Not, it helps me out a little bit, just, you know, if you choose to do so. Anyway, you know, all during FDR's at least first term, but even going further into it, he didn't hesitate to put the blame on Hoover, who left the country in horrible financial shape. And that's what I think Obama is finally getting that message and realizing that he can do it. So here's what else he said today.
10 years ago, we had a budget surplus of more than $200 billion, with projected surpluses stretching out toward the horizon. Yet over the course of the past 10 years, previous administration and previous Congresses created an expensive new drug program, passed massive tax cuts for the wealthy, and funded two wars without paying for any of it, all of which was compounded by recession and by rising health care costs. As a result, when I first walked through the door, the deficit stood at $1.3 trillion, with projected deficits of $8 trillion over the next decade.
So, so at least he's finally going back to calling the Bush administration out on where they left this country. Because, look, I'm not thrilled with much of what Obama's done, but he did inherit a horrible economic mess that it would be impossible for anyone to pull us out of in a year. So there's that. All right. We're getting close to the end of the show. Tomorrow night, you know, since tomorrow there's going to be a hearing on Don't Ask, Don't Tell, maybe tomorrow's the night I get Teddy Partridge back on. Teddy Partridge live blogged the Prop 8 hearings from San Francisco. And he was supposed to be on with us last Friday, and then the Air America plug got pulled. But so maybe we'll try to get him on, and we'll see what else plays out in the news tomorrow. In the meantime, boy, I watched the Grammys last night. Those were 3 hours I'll never get back. But I'll tell you one thing that stood out to me, and we're going to run over by a couple of minutes because I'm going to play you a song here, was, and I knew it, but what an awesome guitar player Jeff Beck is. So I pulled one out from the archives, probably my very favorite Jeff Beck song on Radio or Not. Good night, everyone. I'll talk to you tomorrow, radio or not.